This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, August 20th, 2007. I'm Caleb Brown. India is among the fastest growing economies in the world, but a hyper-regulated economy, illiteracy, and insecure property rights continue to hold back India's poor rural populations. Parth Shah, president of the Center for Civil Society in India, believes the same liberalization granted to the high-tech Indian economy should also come to India's rural areas. Shah visited the Cato Institute earlier this month. I saw an ad on YouTube produced by the India Brand Equity Foundation, and the slogan, essentially, that they had devised for India was fastest growing free market democracy, and they particularly focused on independent judiciary. They flashed up on the screen, and free press, which they flashed up on the screen as well. I just found that to be very interesting.
I agree with you. Actually, when you see the words they have used and the phrases they are using, it's quite clear whom they are targeting, whom they are comparing India with, right? So it's China. So the free markets, democracy, independent judiciary, free press are actually the good institutions that we have in India, which largely don't exist in China. And I think that's has been a very important sort of topic of discussion in terms of China versus India, which country is going to move forward and achieve the kind of things we want in a good society. Actually, my concern with China is not so much in terms of economics. It's largely in terms of demographics. The China, because of the one-child policy that they have implemented for the last two generations, you now have a family in which the child has no brother, no sister. In the second generation, the child has no uncle, no aunt, because the child's parents are also single child of the grandparents, right? So you have created a human family of a kind that we have never known in human history, right? And it's not understood what implications this new sort of family structure would have in terms of political stability, the economic dynamics of China. And I see that as actually far more important concern in terms of the future of China.
There is a belief that within some developing countries that high rates of economic growth may actually stifle further liberalization of the economies. Could you talk about that?
Actually, that belief must have originated from India. Because what has happened in India that, as you know, we had 10% rate of growth last year. But in the last 3 years, there has been hardly any economic reforms in the country. And so it seems that unless the politicians have their back against the wall, they hardly seem to be interested in doing economic reform that need to be done.
Ian Vasquez here at the Cato Institute suggests that the size of the informal economy in a country is an indicator of serious economic problems within that country, and apparently about 90% of India's economy is informal. And yet many of the regulations that exist in India would seem to actually make it less likely for a great number of the extremely poor in India to participate in the formal economy.
Very true. Actually, just in terms of numbers, 90% of the workforce is in the informal sector. The 10% which is in the formal sector, 6% of the 10% is in the government. And the remaining 4% is in the formal private sector, right? And that gives you, I think, a very good clue in terms of where the problem lies in terms of India moving forward in the future. In the informal sector, what has happened is that, as you said, there are a large number of old regulations. Right? I'll give you one example for hawkers and cycle rickshaw pullers in the cities like Delhi. And these rules apply to actually in all cities and towns across the country. There's a law that applies to cycle rickshaw pullers in Delhi that says the cycle rickshaw driver and the owner must be the same person. So if you are pulling a cycle rickshaw, you must own that rickshaw, right? Now, if you think about this, you realize that even though there is good intention behind the law, probably, to prevent exploitation of the rickshaw puller by the middleman, by the people who rent cycle rickshaws, the banning of renting of cycle rickshaws has its own problems, right? And once you begin to think through what is actually happening to cycle rickshaw puller, you realize that this is a classic example of the law of unintended consequences, where you intend to do good for the guy, what you actually end up doing is harming the same person.
In that area, pulling rickshaws, it may not be a particular otherwise a growth sector of the economy. It's not going to ever be a huge part of the Indian economy, but in areas like agriculture, where there could be so much more productivity from the land there, what is holding back that industry?
It's true that nobody sees cycle rickshaw as a growth industry. But if you, again, think about that, you realize that the cycle rickshaw puller, that's the business that I know about, right? If I want to grow in that business, the only way to grow is for me to be able to buy a couple of more rickshaws and rent them out. But renting, of course, is illegal. So in a sense, what you have done is to constrain this cycle rickshaw puller forever to earn only enough that he can earn from one cycle rickshaw, right? And so in a sense, not the growth of the cycle rickshaw industry, but growth of that individual in terms of moving up the economic ladder has been sort of stymied because of this bad law. In agriculture that you spoke about, we have a law called the Essential Commodities Act. This was passed in 1950s when we had a famine in the country. The act regulates in minute detail the production, transport, storage, trading of agricultural goods in the country. For example, in Maharashtra, the act says that the sugarcane farmer cannot take his sugarcane across the district line without government's permission. And in quite a few places, the act specifies which sugar mill the farmer must sell his sugarcane to. And if you understand this logic, you realize that it's no surprise the farmer does not get a good price for his produce.
How secure are land rights in the rural areas of India?
Actually, Hernando de Soto, in his book, The Mystery of Capital, has an interesting story that the one person, in a sense, who knows where your land ends, another person's land begins, is your dog. And the dog actually knows the boundaries of, you know, what your private property is. So in a sense, socially, it's quite understood what the boundaries are. But those boundaries are not legally codified. And that, as you can see, creates a huge problem when you have to transact property. Buying and selling of land becomes a Herculean task.
You say that most of the liberalization that has occurred in the Indian economy has been in these sectors that are extremely high growth sectors. Do the people who work in these industries and are leaders in these industries and mainly live in the urban areas, do they see the problems of the rural areas?
Well, actually, the extremely high growth sectors are the ones where we have high degree of liberalization. Right. So, for example, in cell phone industry, in telecommunication, in airlines, in banking, finance, all of these areas, in service sector generally, call centers and BPOs, you see tremendous growth in the economy. Those are the areas where we have abolished the license permit Raj. But the areas in which the poor earn their livelihood, the hawking on the streets or cycle rickshaw pulling, small businesses, we don't require much capital or skill. In all of those areas, we still have the same old license permit Raj. And that's the reason why the poor are not doing as well as they could have done under the new reform economy.
Parth Shah is president of the Center for Civil Society in India. This is the Cato Daily Podcast. Please consider a donation to the Cato Institute at our website, cato.org.